Hare Krishna. Okay, so we're going to continue from yesterday. So we're talking about self-development, and that's a sort of outreach word for Varnashrama, because this is part of our Varnashram series. And we want to get across the importance of these things. So we didn't notice that the other plug is the right plug, the one inside the machine. We tried phoning, but you'd already gone. Thank you. Apologies. Because, as Srimad Bhagavatam says, Nivritta Tarshari Pagiyamana, that unless, for instance, compassion, unless one is compassionate, one cannot really understand Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Dharma. And similarly, these other qualities are the first four. If you remember that the 21 qualities of human beings, the first four are the qualities of religiosity, the first basic qualities. And of course, real religion, what to speak of beyond religion is Bhagavad Dharma, requires people to be human beings. And that's it's a feature that when we talk about it, people sort of react very interestingly when we tell them that human beings aren't just people with two legs. But human beings are determined by their consciousness. And if your consciousness is that of a four-legged animal, or even worse, if it's the consciousness of a centipede, then you're not a human being. Human being means you have to have the consciousness of a human. And the first part which we gave was ahimsa, which we sort of touched on yesterday. I'm not quite sure why this is a shtig leading out to nowhere, but it looks good. And in presenting the ideals of vegetarianism, and we sort of include vegans in that also, just because they sort of have very similar values to a certain extent, and then beyond that, they don't. But from the ethical, the health, the economical, environmental, and the faith perspective, vegetarianism is the desired means of living, of sustenance, and of course, very importantly, it's for us. We start from the religious point of view. Nowadays, many people who are becoming vegetarians and especially vegans, the main issue of all of these, the main issue of all of these is environment. They become vegetarians and they become vegans due to environmental considerations, or maybe ethical considerations, or maybe health consideration. And faith becomes sort of the last thing. When about some interesting statistics, research from Devamrita Maharaj, pointing out that the how many more believers there are in America than there are in Europe, and that even the non-believers, you don't call them atheists anymore, you call them people who don't, even the non-believers are more religious in America than the believers are in Europe, Western Europe. Maybe they didn't consider Eastern Europe to be of any significance. So, but now we're going on to the second one, which we also discussed yesterday, which is the second leg, and these are like trendy words, sacredness. Don't use it. Religiosity, it's like a no-no. So you have to use words that people understand. It ultimately means the same thing. Or maybe to many people it means nothing. They don't know what it means. But they use it anyway because it's trendy. And as I mentioned yesterday I skipped over this little slide here. But that's my father on my right, on your right, and that's me in the middle, and that's Dixie on the top, and that's my uncle, my father's sister's husband. And there was, you always have to start, if you look at BBC article, a newspaper article, it always starts off with a story. You have to start off with a story. So this is a story that was somewhere around 8-9 years old, and I had soldiers, just like boys always have soldiers. And somehow or another, I got into my head, sometimes when I would stay over at my uncle's place, there was another visitor from Hungary over here, a relative. And I started stealing money from her. This is my confession. And it was sort of a dollar at a time, but a dollar was a lot of money at that time, considering I think my father's weekly salary was $75. So, and that this was for someone who was visiting from Hungary. So a dollar was really a lot of money. And after I accumulated, I don't know, some minor fortune of about $3-4, then I went and bought this soldier that I'd been eyeing for a long time in the store. And I was playing with it, and my father noticed that I had the soldier. And I guess he knew the inventory of what the soldiers that I had, and he asked, well, where did you get this from? And I said, I bought it with my allowance. But my allowance was only 50 cents a week. So he was a little suspicious, and so he said, well, let's go to the toy store and ask the owner. So we did go to the toy store, and the owner admitted that, no, it doesn't cost 50 cents, this costs about $4. So then my father got suspicious. And in the meantime, that aunt, who I think was the mother of my cousin, not my cousin Robert, another cousin Peter, and another Peter. So she had noticed this and had mentioned it, but no one really thought that I would do something like that. Anyway, my father was very upset, and when he put two and two together, then he started to cry. So from that moment, I never lied and I never stole. And I was about 8-9 years old. Okay, now people are really touched by that story, and then they open up and listen to the rest of the thing, which isn't so touching. And we started yesterday with our definition. And the definition was that truthfulness is to be in accord with reality in one's thought, speech, and actions. And this presentation, and it's a good definition. We have sort of more absolute definition of truthfulness in relationship to the absolute truth. But this is a really good definition that you can use, because it does talk about reality. For us, reality is absolute reality, but there are also many relative realities, and we're going to see one. And there are four parts to this presentation. One is just discussing what really foundational principles of truthfulness are. And you have to keep in mind, this is like a 45-minute presentation when I'm doing this. And so it's, although in Hungarian, it comes out a little longer. It's quite sort of wordy, at least generally more wordy in presentations than I do. Usually I just like to stick to pictures. And so we can't go into real depth, and it doesn't go into real depth as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned. I'll try to put a little more Krishna conscious slant on it. And so these are the four aspects. One is, what are the foundational principles of truthfulness? And then certain questions that come up in regards to what it means to be truthful. And then we come to the conclusion, or a natural conclusion, that we're not as truthful as we should be, or we're not truthful at all in the way that we think, speak, and live. And then, well, how do you improve? What are the instruments for actually raising our quality of truthfulness? And we start off with reality. For most people, when we talk about reality, they talk about the world around us. This is what's real. And here's the way they think that the world came about. Just like that, all of a sudden out of nowhere. Well, that's not nowhere, but then all of a sudden it just went pop. And there were planets and stars and universes, and usually this is where I digress for a couple of minutes into the insanity of creation, as scientists propose that it be. But this world that we live in has certain very natural laws. Gravity is one of them. That keeps us stuck to the ground so that we don't go floating off everywhere. Then there's the laws of cause and effect. For every action, there's a reaction. And we'll just use this as one of our examples. There's the environment that we live in other words, the world around us, and multiple laws that govern that world that we live in. There's laws of physics, there's laws of chemistry, there's laws of biology, there's mathematics, and so on. And if you really want to get down to complicated things, then there's the law of relativity. And at this point, it's time for just a little thought to contemplate how much in harmony, because remember, the definition is how much in harmony we are with this reality. How much in harmony are we with the laws of nature, with our environment, and with the laws of cause and effect? So let me just ask this question. Do we really plan our lives to be in harmony with the laws of nature? And when we talk about our lives, then our lives include our profession. And of course, everyone's profession here is being Krishna conscious, or they have some other type of work. Some of them is maybe working in the world outside. But what type of work do people take up? Is our profession really in harmony with the natural way of things? Well, in the world today, there's very few people, if any at all, whose profession is harmonious with the world around them. Even, for instance, you can say the farmers who are producing the food that people eat, but still, the way they're producing the food is certainly not organic. It's inorganic. Even when, I'll come to organic later, it's inorganic, it's not in harmony. They use all kinds of fertilizers, which poisons the soil, which puts poisons into the food that we eat. The food that we eat is in greater measure chemicals than food when you buy the shop. So it may be cheaper. The reason that it's cheaper to buy at Tesco's than to buy from New Rajadam is because chemicals are cheaper than food. So keep buying chemicals, but it's not harmonious, it's not natural. And even when they talk about organic, they have organic meat and organic eggs and organic chicken. It sounds very organic, but it's not the natural way of things. It's not the way humans are meant to be living. And of course, for someone who'd already seen the first presentation on vegetarianism, then they understand why we say that, because humans aren't meant to be eating like that. So, practically speaking, very little, if any, professions or way of life is in harmony with nature, but we should see what they are. The car that we're driving, obviously, cars serve a certain purpose, but at what price? Is our car in harmony? Let me just go on to some of these others. Is the house that we live in? People, of course, say, well, what's our house got to do with the environment? But how does your house get built? What are the materials that are used in the construction of your house? Is your house like, well, even like one of these houses in Shomatlash, standing 100 years later? And if it's not standing, it doesn't really matter, because it's collapsed and it's made of the same earth that it stood upon. But the houses that we live in, and of course we're also guilty of using that, bricks are okay, but cement? We don't know what cement is like. When I was in university, and during the summer, I worked with some relatives, prefab concrete company. So that was when concrete was becoming very, very popular, and it's even more popular now. No one knows how long it lasts. No one knows what its lifespan is. No one knows what will happen to concrete after 100 years or 150 years. Will the 100-story buildings collapse? Will it just all of a sudden collapse due to fatigue? We don't know. We know how steel functions, we know how iron functions, we know how stones function. They last for millions of years. There are temples in India that are millions of years old, made of stone. We know how long terracotta. We don't know what this thing, cement, does. We'll find out, but it'll take experience because there's no history of it. And, of course, the food, is the food that we eat in harmony? And is our entertainment in harmony with the world around us? So, the question is, now this is the question to you, hands up, is whose lifestyle is in harmony with the world around us? You're supposed to know. If I say yes, raise your hands. Who says their lifestyle is in harmony with the world around us? Hands up, yes? Okay, Samantha, he seems like a lone ranger here. And who's no? Okay, seems like most of the people here are truthful. Let's examine one. I don't know if you know this little gadget. It's a very interesting thing. I don't even know what it's called, aside from balls. But the laws of cause and effect means that for every action, there's going to be a reaction. So consider, do we consider what the reaction is to our lifestyle, our activities in these different ways? Generally, waking up to the fact that there's such a thing as reaction, and there's real concern about, for instance, the environmental damage that our life is causing. This plastic. Just yesterday I sent out this picture of a plastic bag, and it's about a bird, it's a seabird, inside a plastic bag. He's just standing there, and his beak is protruding out of the plastic. I don't want to leave here, but I can show you the picture. In fact, I may show you the picture, but it will take a moment. Anyway, it's very dramatic. Let me do it, because you're all addicted to plastic, as am I. He's not the only one, this is not a show. So whether you think that the plastic is the biodegradable, which means absolutely nothing, it just means that they put some chemicals to dissolve the plastic into the plastic, but it means instead of thousands of years, the plastic will be forming in the ocean for hundreds of years. But in the meantime, that's what it's doing. So, ask yourself, Sanatan, are you living in harmony with the world around you? Let's just go back to where we were.